This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is away. I'm Bob Garfield. This week, a 250,000 deaths into a historic pandemic whose latest wave is ravaging the heartland, came the news that public health restrictions to keep Americans alive are still an attack on liberty. Trump administration spokeswoman Kayleigh McEnany.
Yeah, I think a lot of the guidelines you're seeing are Orwellian.
Yeah, something's Orwellian. It isn't masks. Meanwhile, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem continued to castigate mask mandates and other precautions, even as her state's COVID infection rate has approximately quadrupled in the past 60 days. She's standing by the policy that welcomed 400,000 people to a town of 7,000 this summer for the Sturgis biker rally, leading to an estimated 250,000 infections.
They're happy because they're free.
And maybe because, as we learned this week, there's a vaccine on the way. In fact, two of them.
Moderna issuing bombshell news when it said that their vaccine is more than 94% effective.
Pfizer reporting their vaccine is even more effective than first thought.
But as we head into winter, with widespread distribution of a vaccine still months away, we are faced with a reckoning. If a vaccine falls in the forest and half the population doesn't take it, will it make a noise?
So about two-thirds of the country would need to basically be immunized.
That is far from certain.
A new Gallup poll finds that 58% of Americans said they would get a COVID-19 vaccine. That's actually up from 50% in September.
Some are anti-vaxxers who wrongly believe vaccine components are dangerous. Some are dubious of Big Pharma's integrity because it's been known to suppress clinical data, hide manufacturing defects, and lately, addict millions to opioids while denying the risks.
The company that makes OxyContin has agreed to plead guilty to criminal charges related to how it marketed the drug.
Others are skeptical of a brand new treatment developed at warp speed. Still others have been trained to disbelieve anything uttered by scientists and other elites. Orwell has indeed had his say. Up is down and down is up. The upshot being that the long sought after world-saving vaccine may turn out not to matter. This is the toll of demagoguery, ignorance, and hatred, for which no vaccine offers immunity. On the question of public trust, there is yet another irritant. When official policies, like partisan rhetoric, also are arbitrary, inconsistent, and sometimes untethered to science. Writing in Wired this week, science journalist Roxanne Camsey documented several cases, beginning with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's announcement that, under certain circumstances, out-of-state visitors could quarantine for only 4 days.
When I contacted the state's health department to say, hey, what study did you use to come up with that metric? They just sent me Cuomo's comments saying we're really respectful of science and this is a good decision, but I didn't see any study. And I think that that's what I continue to chase is the studies, particularly because the new research I had in front of me was suggesting that 6 or 7 days was a better time to get that test to know if you could exit quarantine.
In Alberta, Canada, because people found it inconvenient to be isolated for a long period of time, they allowed incoming travelers to quarantine for only 48 hours.
Yeah. They tell you to please also get a test at 6 or 7 days after your arrival, just to be sure. But like, what is the point of that? You've already been walking around potentially spreading the virus there. You know, I reached out to Alberta. I asked them to help me understand, and I didn't hear back from them. the onus is really on people like me, the reporting on this pandemic, to ask these questions. But it would be really nice if some of these health departments were more informative in terms of having some of this data, this literature at hand to say, oh, okay, yeah, we actually made this based on some facts. Here you go.
This week in Iowa, where COVID is just out of control, and where Governor Kim Reynolds announced policies on Monday, including this.
Starting tomorrow, when you're in an indoor public space and unable to social distance for 15 minutes or longer, masks are required to be worn.
She also announced that indoor gatherings would be limited to 15 people. Now, science tells us that being indoors in a crowd is the most dangerous thing you can do right now. But evidently in Iowa, 14 people for 14 minutes is just fine.
This is tricky because there are definitely papers that say in a room of X cubic feet, X many people for X number of minutes. Like, there are people doing calculations to estimate how many particles of the virus will end up in the air and how safe it is and how likely you are to catch it. There's like tons of modeling. I think what you're getting at is my gut reaction, which is at this stage, until we're more like informed and feel more secure about that science, we might want to play it safe and just say, hey, like, indoors is not a great place to be right now, particularly with dining. I think like in Madrid, they closed the parks, but they kept indoor dining and people were just scratching their heads and saying, how is this adding up? In a year that's particularly befuddling, I think these rules just add another level of befuddlement, which we really don't need.
If the subject is COVID theater, there's this other category of focusing on fine detail instead of the broader risks. You write about South Africa, which instituted a policy last winter, which is our summer, on sales of shorts and open-toed shoes. Open-toed shoes?
So yeah, South Africa decided it wanted people to only go out for like essential clothing for their winter, so only things that could keep them warm. And they said you could only buy cropped bottoms, like shorts or things like that, if they were to be worn over leggings. And like, I have not seen that style since maybe the 1980s. I don't know who wears that style, but like, can I also just say that I like to wear open-toe shoes in the house all winter long. So I would be really sad if they had instituted something like that here. Like, what is winter clothing after all? I think it's nuts.
I think I've buried the lead here because you're in Montreal and there they have some public health guidance, which I guess is about, just tell me what it is.
In September, the country's chief public health officer, Theresa Tam, recommended that you skip kissing and that if you're going to have sex, you might want to wear a mask during it.
Is there any scientific basis for that whatsoever?
I don't know if NIH would fund that. I mean, it would be an unethical study, right? So no, I mean, the short answer is, I am not aware of any science suggesting that you are going to be much better off having sex with a mask on than with it off as it pertains to coronavirus.
I want to talk to you about thermometers. I have had my temperature taken more in the past 6 months than all of my previous 65 years put together. Does being 98.6 or lower mean I'm not a vector?
I mean, no, right? This is the great paradox of this pandemic, perhaps, is like we're getting our temperature checked all the time. And at the same time, what we're being told by the scientists is that what makes this pathogen so special and so hard to quash is that it is readily transmitted by people who are totally asymptomatic. So again, like, show me the data. Show me why people are running out to buy these temperature checks when it might even be giving us a false sense of security. And that's really concerning.
All right. Now, finally, let's turn to the policy that has become basically the 11th commandment. Thou shalt socially distance to 6 feet. And that commandment has worked. I mean, it's influenced humans because it sounds so definitive. Where did it come from? And does it really deserve to be etched in stone?
Well, let me just say that if you're etching it in stone and you're in Europe, you're going to want to put 2 meters instead of 6 feet, because somehow the virus can travel a little bit further in Europe than here, where we only have 6 feet. So, you know, maybe you want 2 stones. This stuff goes way back to like the 1930s, where there was this guy, William Wells, who was a sanitary engineer, and he was just looking to see how far droplets went out of people's mouths. people were placed in these special honeymoon resorts where they would have pairs of people spending time with one another, figuring out how quickly the virus spread from one person to another. And they started to get an inkling, okay, 3 feet, based on Wells's work, based on these experiments with people spending time in the same room, 3 feet seemed like a good rule of thumb. And that's how they got to 3 feet. You're probably wondering how they got from there to 6 feet.
I'll be asking the questions here. How did they get from there to 6 feet?
So what happened was 3 feet seemed good, but then more recently, you know, with the original SARS outbreak in 2003, with swine flu, people started to look at patterns of transmission on airplanes. And they would look and see that people seated like a couple rows apart, one person would transmit the pathogen to the other. So 3 feet seemed like too short. 6 feet was maybe like the distance between two rows of an airplane. I mean, the problem is we're trying to reconstruct the logic by which this 6-foot rule was arrived upon. But we shouldn't be having to do this guesswork. It would be great if our public health officials put out a document and said, by the way, for the last 8 months, you've all been wondering how we came to 6 feet. This is how we came to it. I mean, that would be a wonderful, if not Thanksgiving gift, like a Christmas present for all science journalists.
What happens to public trust when authorities pose as men and women of action with actions that are meaningless or worse? You know, isn't there a boy who cried wolf problem here?
That is my deeper concern. Beyond my regret at seeing how some of the literature on airborne transmission was ignored and how potentially lives were lost because agencies were really slow to act on that, or at least relay that information to the public, I think that there's a deeper, more sinister threat here when public health agencies don't become more transparent. One is, in the modern day, right now, they're contradicting one another, which is already breeding skepticism. But then in the longer term, if we find out that these decisions, these rules that are kind of willy-nilly don't hold up, I think if there's a SARS-CoV-3, you know, they're going to start on weaker footing in terms of convincing the public to do things because they've been undermining themselves by not being transparent. You can't be held accountable if you're not transparent.
And then there's the adjacent problem, which is that science has been learning on the fly. When this all began, for example, we were told that, you know, masks were not relevant because the pathogens were smaller than the pores in the masks. And we were told that we should be concerned about surfaces.
Bob, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to cut in, but you struck upon something that was so that I feel so passionate about, which is the "we" in that sentence that you just used. If you think back, people in places like Singapore and places that had seen SARS, they didn't have this equivocation about masks that I think the "we" that you're talking about had. We in North America, for example. "We didn't know" is like, oh, I get chills when I say it because it makes me so viscerally regretful of the way this pandemic has played out. Actually, a lot of places knew. A lot of places have been doing things right. A lot of places looked at the science in a totally different way. I don't know what happened. Maybe the internet broke down in 2020, but it doesn't seem like some of the information traveled from one continent to the other. And it continues. Why is New York doing something different from another state? It doesn't add up. And what I fear is that it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. We're going to see so much diversity in rulemaking that it's going to drive us crazy.
Roxanne, we thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Roxanne Kamsey is a science journalist. Her article in Wired is titled "A Lack of Transparency is Undermining Pandemic Policy." This is On the Media.